members, now taking note that time is against us, is not our, on our side today. Welcome to everybody, DG and the official. We want to apologize, DG, because we did send a notice, not officially but verbally, that would request to be early. All members are members of a committee that is attending an electricity summit in Durban. And the Department of Energy has made bookings, and the only flight they could get is a 1:30 flight. So we'll just compress, and we'll try and have some time once more, even in the next term. Because there are issues that we also wanted to raise. We've been to India, we've been to other countries, and we've visited embassies. We've had an opportunity to do some oversights on embassies, on a few embassies. But with your skill, I'm sure we'll compress it by at least 11:45. We finish 10:02, we leave, so that members take transport to the airport. Over to you, DG.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Gamere, and the Honourable Members of the Select Committee on Trade and the Flesh. You have the slide presentation, so I will really just, Honourable Chair, just go through them very, very quickly so that we have time to have question and answers. We will come to appear before you, Honourable Members, on the Annual Performance Plan 2012-2013 and the Strategic Plan 2012-2017 that we have compiled and in a way to comply with the Outcome Delivery 11 of the Money Performance Assessment Tool, AMPET. We can also report to the Honourable Members that this time around, DEDCO has fully aligned our plans to the National Treasury Guidelines of August 2010. So we've catched up in terms of that. Just a slight overview. I will take our members very briefly through the four budget programs of the department and the plan policy initiatives, two of them this year, because we see our members' support on these two policies. The one is South African Development Partnership Agency, SADPA, and the Foreign Service Bill. I will then take members through analysis, availability of operating, and our usual focus, and then give members a view on the other support services. As I said, we have realigned our programs, and so we work on programs, the first program, international relations and cooperation, that is program two, public diplomacy and state protocol program three, admission one, and digital transfer four. When you vote our budget, you vote based on this program. It's a new realignment on that. Now, the Partnership Development Fund, one of members, this is one of the new initiatives. It has been there. We hope that we can conclude and implement this initiative this year. Unlike the present Agri-Resilience Fund, here we are going to have Board of Trustees to make sure that we have proper and effective use of the fund. And I'm just going to look into the policy and oversight. And we're also going to look at the policy and oversight and then advise the minister. Now, the Partnership Fund, as we say, is going to replace the Agri-Resilience Fund, ARF Act 51-2001, and will act as a separate juristic person. So, presently, ARF is, I'm the chair of the board of the ARF, and I'm the accounting officer of the ARF. So, with this one, honorable members, we propose that it should be a very separate entity. We thought first of making changes to the ARF, but we found there's going to be so numerous changes that it's going to lose face you want to change things and change and change and change, it's not to lose. So we thought, that's the best thing, let's start a new one. But part of what we're then going to be doing in this one is to support all the outgoing development cooperation commitments. Presently, honorable members, we have so many government departments doing so much good work internationally, especially in Africa. Defense, you have DTI, you have... but there has been no coordination of these programs to have effect, and so we can then account at once what are they doing. So SADBA intends to make sure that all of them are under one roof. And to provide for direct transfer of funds from multiple sources. Now, as currently structured, as I said, it is not possible for us to do that. So we want to have a possibility where we can have that. But also we've been approached by a number of development agencies who says, we want to cooperate with you. You know, when you're doing the census in the DRC in 2004, Sweden worked with us and the DBS, PSP, our Public Service Commission. Now, we want to make sure that this is properly done, aligned, and institutionalized. And we also want to make sure that as we do so, we don't forget that we have to comply with the PFMA and Treasury regulations. You see, ARF is not proactive. You react to requests. So you can't plan at the beginning of the year that I'm going to have 10 requests, I'm going to have so much. You can't. ARF is a solidarity fund. So you wait for emergencies like Somalia. Like now you have Congo. There was explosion there. You don't want to react to those. So if you ask my members in ARF, Jerry, tell me, how much are you going to work this year? It's very difficult to say. But with SADBA, there will be a bit of certainty on that. So, and we've made studies, honorable members. The last one were in the UK, were in Serbia, and in Norway, to see, in Serbia, the new structure, we just joined the EU, how they began this sort of development fund. Not an old established one. Different for the UK, is very active in Africa, so we wanted to learn from other development agencies how they manage their fund, how they are accounting to the parliament, how they are accounted to the public, how they are audited, participation of the stakeholders. So we've done all these studies in the recent past. So, as of now, honorable members, this has gone through, SADBA has gone through numerous processes, and we're then developing a bill, the bill that will replace the ARF bill. And secondly, we are going to be talking with other number of agencies, like CEDA, NORAD, DANIDA, and others, to see how we cooperate whilst from South African side, we're still observing our supply chain requirements, we're still conforming to our audit, so we're going to be developing those kind of areas. Third, trilateral cooperation. There's an increasing request for that. So we are working on those sort of modalities of how we handle the SADBA. But very important for us is time frames, honorable members. We had hoped that by the 1st of April, we can begin to phase in SADBA, phase out ARF, and transfer all the assets of ARF to SADBA. We have thought that by now, we'll have a CEO of SADBA, and then the necessary staff that have been created. That by now shall have a board of SADBA. So these are processes that we hope we can go through in April. The likelihood of implementation is around June this year. But I don't want to say there's going to be a gradual phase out. So we really seek your support in that process. It has more fund than ARF. ARF, we appropriate around 450 million rand annually from the treasury at DERCO. But then if you bring all these other funds from other government entities, and then also look into the transfers from SACU revenue, if implement the new SACU formula revenue, you'll have a very substantial amount of funds that will constitute Tarragon Development and Fund to the continent. That was the first initiative. Second initiative, remember, is this Foreign Service Bill. Now, the current legal framework is that the public service of South Africa is established in terms of Section 187 of the Constitution of South Africa. The public service is governed by the Public Service Act of 1994. This is established one department and is regulated by PSA. Constitutional service applicable to foreign service dispensation are determined by the means of DPSA in terms of Section 2, 3, etc. This is what is obtained now as DERCO. So when I look for conditional service of a diplomat in Fiji, in Uruguay, in whatever, it is done through the public service. Now I think that is constraining us. That is constraining us. If President Zuma have to appoint somebody to be an ambassador, he has to look at what is the age group. And you find that you have this person who can use even at about 67 or 70 years, but then you have this act that has to regulate that. So I say, give us an opportunity because we are acting in a different environment. Then we are saying that the Foreign Service has not been specifically identified as a national service in the Public Service Act, like the defense, like security, like the police. So there's a different dispensation because they act differently. Two, the role of the DERCO with regard to foreign service should be strengthened. If I be determined the condition of service of diplomats and the entitlement, I have to go through the public service. And the role of mission as a coordinator need to be strengthened. You know, heads of missions play a particular role because they operate in environment. When you go to the embassy, that's Arabian territory. That's Arabian territory. So they need to be given some particular role to play. We need to supplement legislation to give effect to the nature of the Foreign Service as a commander of DERCO. So that will be the sense of this new bill, honorable members, Foreign Service Bill that will be put in before you. There's none of legal instruments. The department operates in an international environment that is not taken into account by PSA. We don't influence that environment. We don't. We try to do our best to act in that environment, but we don't influence it. My colleague in water affairs in Limpopo is influenced by an environment, so PSA can. But my colleague operating in Peru is a different environment, which DPSA cannot control, I cannot control, you cannot control. So therefore, we need to look at that thing differently. Let's take into account different legal system of various countries. When I employ a local recruited staff in Belgium, the legal system is different from Botswana, Malawi. We have 126 missions with 126 different legislative regarding the employment of staff. Now, DPSA doesn't understand that. That I'm acting, I have to provide services in 126 different legal environments. We are bound by the obligation to treat the protocol. That's another thing. But when we act abroad, we have to take into account existing international treaties protocols. Now, some of these things might not be in the immediate focus of DPSA. We are serving abroad. Maintaining properties and assets abroad compared to different legislation in those countries and conduct financial transactions abroad. So these are some of the issues, all remember, that we thought you should be aware of, so that when we come to you and say, help us to have a new Foreign Service Bill, so that we are mentioned in PSA as a particular entity. Honourable members can support us.
Okay,
now, we are duty bound, honourable members, by the new Treasury regulation and planning process in the presidency to always, first of all, before we give you a plan, to scan the legal environment which you are operating. Very briefly, the current environment is characterized by a shift in global economic and social dynamics. We're talking about new world, new points of influence have emerged. We used to have, until 10 years ago, unipolarity world, but now we have multiple points of influence, largely arising because of the emergence of the BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, in those areas, emergence of South Africa in the continent. Now, this is a new reality in which we are working. And therefore, there's a new realignment of new economic powers. Right now, China is bailing out Europe. Who could have thought about that 10 years ago? That Europe can go to China for a bailout. You go to a communist country to bail out capitalist countries. This was unthinkable, but it's happening today. On our new media and social networks, MENA region, Middle East and North Africa, the role of new media and social networks. So governments don't determine the destiny alone anymore. Civil society and others are part of that. But new innovation in terms of technology, and in terms of transport, communication, health, etc., etc. Environmental changes and impact of environment diplomacy. We just had COP17, and all of us, we began to realize the importance of environmental changes and how this impact on our work in terms of agriculture, rainfall, construction, water patterns. And also we have new economic and political groupings. Now we have BRICS, we had IPSA, now we have BRICS, G20 from G8. So these are the new formations that to a great extent influence how power relations is managed and dispensed globally. Convergence of information platform, global mass media, social networking empowers free for information ideas. We don't have a monopoly anymore. In the past, foreign affairs used to have a monopoly of information. South Africa is what is happening globally. Today we don't have. When I come in, the man has only Googled and just to get Jerry talking and just say, what is men saying, you know. But in the past, I'll be the monopoly and custodian of information globally. But today, you Google before I come here and see, look at this guy telling us all these things, you know. We have seen them. So when we do our work as Virgo, we take cognizance of this, that you are equally informed and up-to-date informed like us. That raises the level of skills of diplomats, because you are no longer the monopoly of information, etc., etc. Now we see the impact in the MENA region, the power of ordinary people, the power of civil society, the power of the poor people, the power of marginalized people when they organize themselves, and the changes that they bring in. Our economy is also linked now with these new powers. You see, no matter when I come later on, how we have shifted the South Africa from the West to the emerging powers. Now, when we plan in 2012-2017 and beyond, in our planning process, we have to take cognizance of those changes that are taking place. We have a growth in the South. There is a huge growth in the South. And we see proliferation of regional trading arrangements. Well, WTO has failed. WTO is in perpetual intensive care. So what then happens in absence of globally agreed legal trading, then it goes to the region. So region becomes to start to form a particular trade. Like we have now, we have SADC is going towards integration. We have now trilateral trade now arrangements. We are becoming that with East Africa, with ECA, Commerce, and so on. So we are all moving global. If you take the globe, you see everywhere that this regional arrangement. supposed to have one global trading system, but WTO is not working. It does not deliver the goods, so we are all resorting to regional formation. Okay, can skip that. Now, this is why I was saying what I remember. I'm on slide 16 about regional integration. Now, this is our region, South Africa. This is where we spend most of our time. Luckily, we have embassies in all the 14 southern countries. It's our base. But what we see in this region, we are if you look to bullet two, the trade has grown significantly since the protocol on trade in 2000. So that shows that if you have a trade protocol, you remove barriers, you lessen the barriers to trade, you can really have a huge explosion in trade. Well, unfortunately, there's been slightly more trading with the region, but it is a huge explosion in terms of trade. However, the only problem is inter-trade in SADC. But we are also saying, if you look into the reduction of SACU revenue in 2010-9, it shows how global economic meltdown impact on what you do and what you accrue. You know, Swaziland in 2010-2011 got 5.19 billion, as I said before. But let's say to give them 1.9, so 3 billion off because of a global meltdown, because of common ex-tariff tariffs. So this will impact on us. But there's a determination in SADC for greater integration, that by 2014 we should have a custom union of SADC countries. 2017, we should have a monetary union. In other words, this is a high level of integration. We are behind in terms of a custom union. We said in 2010, we have a custom union. Now, in 2012, we don't have a custom union. So we have to work very hard on those policies. This is just global trend, especially emerging economies. This slide, just show you, slide 60, what is happening. Next slide. Next slide. Now, this is the slide I was talking about the new world. This is the new world, that's slide number 19. Now, if you look at that slide very, very closely, you will see how much changes have taken place between Africa, Western Europe. That now, Asia has overtaken Western Europe to become Africa's largest trading partner. If you come to the last block, I don't have a pointer, but this one on the left. You see Asia, the dark bottom one. In 1990, it was about 13 billion or so. Now look at 2008. It has grown up to around 28% of African trade, from 13% to 28%. Europe, the blue one, was 51% of our trade of Africa was with Europe. Now it's 28%. In 2012, Asia has gone over that towards about 30%. Europe is shrinking. So that this does show you the pattern of changes in global trade and how Asia and Africa have related. North America has also decreased. But most worrying is the intra-African trade is still at 11%. European trade is 80% among Europeans, 20% exported outside. Africa, 11% inside and 89% exported outside. That is the worrying picture for us. Europe can stand the shocks because its own contributors have 80% trade among themselves. But we rely on external trade, 89%. That is what we want to address and that's what we want to change. Next slide. Now, these are the FDI flows into Africa. You can see South Africa is a significant investor in the continent, followed by China and Malaysia. However, last year, China overtook us as the biggest investor in Africa, especially in mining, infrastructure, and manufacturing. But by and large, we are one of the major investors. But if you take the combined investment of these groups, these are from the south, it really becomes a very big thing. Now, in our plan, 2012-2017, this is very important in terms of resources, both human and financial. Next slide. This is just relation between South Africa and BRICS countries. This is very interesting thing because we are going to the BRICS, and people have been asking, why you guys want the BRICS? Now, just look at the trade between South Africa and the BRICS countries from 2007 to 2010. There is no such a growth in global trade between South Africa and any other country except with new countries. Next slide. It's still the same thing. Next slide. Now, these are economic opportunities as you look into this map. Consumer sector, banking, agriculture, resources, and infrastructure. And on that slide, you saw the growth of compound growth, annual growth of some of these issues. And then you understand why we are zooming in infrastructure. And I understand why the president is putting his finger on infrastructure. Why agriculture? Of course, I see a resource country. We need consumer to drive our GDP. But these are the sectors. When we go out, we look into those sectors as a DIRCO and a DTI. Next slide. This is a very significant slide on our numbers. This slide shows you, this is January 2011 to November 2011. Look at the bottom of this slide in terms of Saudi export to a country. Last year, we exported to China 78.45 billion goods. In 1998, when we normalization with China, we are importing 650 million rand. 10 years later, it's 72 billion rand. On the right side is the import. Our import from China was 94 billion rand. But if we combine these two, we see a significant trade between Japan and South Africa and China. Of course, surplus with China. If we go up, we see the U.S., United States is the next one. If you go up, you see Germany, European Union, and then you see India and SARC, and then you can see the African countries. On the right-hand side, in terms of import, you can see significant imports from BRICS countries. So this picture tells you something, as I said earlier on. The need for South Africa to adjust to the reality of new poles of economic growth, new poles of market growth, and we need to be in that market. Next slide. Now, I come to Africa, the trends in the continent, because we are part of the continent. I talk about the world, SADC, to Africa. Now, these are just color coding which I would like honourable members to observe as we go along. The first color coding is moderate growth. The second one is conflict spots, the elections, civil outlook, and monitored. Next slide. This is the conflict in the continent. But you can see was a major white spot. You see, it is more North Africa, some West Africa, the Horn of Africa, Madagascar, and Comoros. But you can see North Sahara Africa is relatively stable, which means as South Africa, we can then trade in this part of the world. And the next one, that's election trend, political economic trends in the continent. So we can see that we have more or less regular planned elections in the continent. So those are coups, but we can see so many countries have elections in the continent. Next one. Of course, before you go to that one. Before we go to that one, you know, Zimbabwe, we're still discussing Zimbabwe. they first have to have a referendum, then elections. Madagascar will help them. Deputy Minister Fransman is now in Madagascar with the team to help them with the elections. Lesotho, you know, recently what has happened in Lesotho. They are trying to avoid elections in Lesotho. You know, professor there, the school to a professor is trying for me not to avoid elections. It's very, very expensive elections. But in the MENA region, in the North Africa, there are numerous elections. We are now assisting Guinea-Bissau with the election processes. Next slide. Angola is going for elections also. This is we predict that we see more and more enhanced stability. We are sure that Egypt will stabilize. We are sure that as we move around, this blue map post-elections will have to stabilize more of the continent. We're monitoring this area. Now you can see that is the belly of Africa. There's Congo, there's the issue of the DRC, Central African Republic, there's Sudan, South Sudan. We need to monitor that. Because if something happened in that part, including Swaziland at the bottom, we need to very closely monitor what is happening in the countries, including South Sudan, and Central Africa. We spend a lot of resources in Africa to try to stabilize this region so that we can then able to embark on massive structure. With this problem, it is very, very difficult to enhance inter-Africa trade. So we need to fix that center. We're working very, very hard in between to normalize between North and South Sudan. We had the foreign minister of Sudan yesterday. Last week, we had the chief of intelligence of South Sudan. Yesterday, it was North Sudan. To try to mediate and you know, bring a bit of stability in that region, Peter. Now these are the political and economic. So this is how Africa looks like. The picture that will emerge from this is that we have come a long way in the continent. There are still areas of concern, but the continents have really come a long, 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 long way. The change in South Africa have stimulated a very positive development in the continent, Peter. Now, this is how the inter-trade in Africa, as I was saying earlier on, that if you look into the left side, you can see in terms of trade. Middle East at the bottom, they trade 10% among themselves, 90% outside because of oil. Then Africa, 12% inter-trade, 88% outside. That's in America 21, it's in Europe 39, so we go up and up and up. But you can see that this is a problem in terms of development going forward, reliance. I must say that Latin America has really worked very hard. 10 years back, they were almost like us, Latin America. But now you can see it's 21% among themselves. Asia is manufacturing because they don't have raw material. That is the picture that I talked about earlier on, other members that we need. In the regions, in the region, you can see different regions. That it is inside like Southern Africa, 51%, we are trying to do about East Africa, 7%. So at least in our region, there is more and more increasing inter-trade. Next slide. Those are the top markets in Europe. So when we have a big embassy in Germany, don't be surprised, because that is our big market, so to say. and the United Kingdom, but Germany is by far still our big market. Next slide. Next slide. Now, no, go back a bit. One slide back. Now, these are foreign direct investments, honorable members. And you can see that by far the United Kingdom is still the bigger investor in South Africa, followed by Germany, Ireland. These are our top investors in South Africa. The Chinese are still trading. The Indians are still trading. But we hope this time they can convert now into real direct investment. Okay. Now this is internal. This is how we are structured. On my right hand side, I have Honorable Moodley, whom you know very well. He is taking care of our finances. He paid my ticket to come down here, Honorable Moodley. He is the DDG, the extreme, on the bottom side, DDG Corporate Services. And next to him, we have Mr. Mohai. Maybe some of you know him from the Public Service Commission. It's DDG HR. I don't have some of my colleagues here. But this is a structure of DIRCO as it is as a president. You can see there's so many DDGs in DIRCO because of the nature of our work. On the right hand side, the column that you see, we say missions per region. We have 46 missions, now 47 missions in Africa. 47 missions in Africa. One Africa multilateral mission, 10 in America, 28 in Europe, not 27, 28 in Europe, the two in the Middle East, two multilateral, so 126 missions. This is the number of missions we have. So we have a very huge footprint, in the world. We can find us almost everywhere now. As I say, from Fiji, at the end of the time zone, 10 hours ahead of us, we have a mission there. Then we go to LA, 9 hours behind, we have a mission there. So we can work across different time zones around the clock, so to say. On the left-hand side is the human resources. At head office, we have a 2,000 plus minus staff in the mission. And then those things is 770. So we have the staff coming about 2,900. It's relatively very small compared to education, health, very small. They took about hundreds of thousands. It's only about 2,000. Next slide. Now, what is coming? We are hosting honorary members in May, 23 to 25, African Diaspora Summit in Sandton in May. We are having close to plus minus 50 heads of states that will be here in May. So we're going to have meetings of academics, business people. Now there is a request that we should look at the legislative involvement, members of parliament to be involved in this process. I think that could be a next thing that we need to talk about. And then we have the NOCPM. These are some of the structures that we use in government in terms of peace, security, etc. Next slide. We still have, so we're still a champion of NIPAD in the continent, in all structures, because we believe that it's a very, very important initiative because it addresses our national priorities. This is slide 31. In job creation, in integration, I was thinking about the trilateral trade arrangements between SADC, COMESA, and ECA. It helps us. We always use NIPAD to market. When we are in the G8, we are in G20 South Africa, participate in FOCAD, participate in TICAD, participate in India. We participate in all these multilateral and plurilateral arrangements. And one of the requirements that President Zuma was asked last year to be the champion and considered coordinator for infrastructure in Africa. So every time he opened his mouth at the AU, talk about infrastructure in the continent. Because we believe there is only way we can increase inter-trade in the continent. Next slide. Okay, go back. Sorry. We have not forgotten the issue of SADC integration. Now there are a bit of challenges. You know, one of the challenges that SADC tribunal is in the ice. When the SADC summit reported in Namibia last year, part of the issue that was about reporting on was Zimbabwe and the farmers. You know, farmers lost land there. But because the way it was managed, the Zimbabwean president objected to the guidelines and the jurisdiction of the tribunal. So we're still discussing its mandate. Can this tribunal impede or intrude into nation state jurisprudence or not? And how should we make sure that we internalize its work into our own processes? Now, I was thinking about SADC integration, because we believe that at the SADC Parliament, we need to discuss these issues, because we need to do a number of legislative changes. If you talk about custom union, then you talk about the common sharing of revenue. Whereas you know now that there's been a very liberal revenue sharing with BNS, with finally sold to Namibia and Swaziland, very liberal. Now, even goes to custom union, now the bigger economy share more. So it means you have to share more with Zimbabwe, Malawi, and other people. That is not the implication going forward. So it's something that you really need as Americans to digest deeply. When you come to monetary union, you have to forgo rand. For what current? You know, what Europe have gone through, you know. Germany says we should not have let go of the mark. You see what is happening with the euro now. And with Greek debt, and Portuguese debt, Spanish debt, Irish debt, now the French debt. We should have kept our mark. In fact, they came here to study the dual currency. You know, we used to have dual rand. Maybe we should have euro for trade, euro for... They are very interested on the P94 financial arrangement in South Africa. Now the question we have to ask as South Africans is, when we come to monetary union, are we ready to forgo our rand and be part of some unit or not? And I said before, Chair, that I think South Africans are not waking up to this reality because of this integration. Because you cannot have them both. You cannot say we integrate, but we keep ours. No. Secondly, are we ready for free movement of people across the borders? When I look into trend, I don't think we have taken our people along. So I hope another one of the constituencies, please take your people, let's take our people along, that we are getting ourselves to open our borders from in and out of everybody in the region. Let's take our people along and prepare them. This is not very far off. I hope we can work hard on this one. Next one, please. Of course, as you know, now we are the chair of the peace and security organ of the WHO. So that's why all the elections are done by us in SADC countries. Next one. The problem, let's go back. The issue of dealing with now is the solution to Zimbabwe. I think the president is going to be going there in Madagascar to urge Zimbabweans to move along on the agreed roadmap. Literally, like really, really moving with them towards. I was in the UK last week and discussing the possibility of assisting in terms of the land issue. We're trying to revive the idea that they put a fund so they can then compensate those who have lost their farm, so that we can bring a bit of stability to the Zimbabwean processes. I was in Zimbabwe 2 months ago to discuss with my counterparts the issue of indigenization. Now, you see my implants yesterday. On Monday, I called the UN ambassador to my office because I thought we've agreed that for South Africa, when they implement indigenization, you don't have to forego 51%. Maybe they can go what we do in South Africa, where Peter and Jerry, Peter's PE, you know, and Peter says, okay, Jerry, have 25%. So that's gradual empowerment that is disrupting the economy. So discussing the Zimbabweans, and part of the reason was because we're not imposing sanctions on Zimbabwe, South Africa. In fact, we're the one in the forefront of demanding lifting of sanctions on Zimbabwe. We're defending Zimbabwe abroad. We're championing Zimbabwe. We're on top with them. So we cannot be treated like other countries. So there must be some form of understanding, etc. So but we hope that as we integrate more and more, these issues can be done, because then we have a system that everybody has to play by. Let's proceed. Okay, just on the next one, there are these important meetings at the bottom. We're going to a big summit. We're hosting next year a South Africa BRICS. And so we're going to have to begin to really start to prepare for this. Why I'm saying this thing, there are going to be two most important things discussed in India. It's a big bank. South Development Bank. So people are saying, why are we building Western Europe? Why don't we put our own bank and support our own infrastructure? The second one is green BRICS, the new economy in BRICS countries, to go green in a massive way. And we believe that these two initiatives hit a core with South Africa. We put our money together, we don't have to depend on the World Bank and IMF and what have you, use our own money. The next goal for our members is green economy. We have lost a bit on telecommunication and ICT, but we don't want to lose on this one. So that's why BRICS Bank for us is very, very important. And I'm also going to be hosting the IPSA meeting this year. So we're going to raise quite a number. It's going to be African Diaspora Summit. The next year, this big one we're hosting next year, etc. This is a daily program of BRICS between us, BRICS. There is $3.35 trillion dollar reserves. We have reserves. We have crossed 50 billion South Africa now, the 50 billion reserves. But China is about 2.3 trillion. India is approaching about a trillion, Brazil also. So we have huge reserves. That's why they need now to really utilize these reserves to do. Next. Can you have the next one? Next one. Except that, go to the first, next, the last one. At the Security Council, all our members, you have realized the work we have done, the adaptations we have done in terms of our policies. But what has been very significant for us was the coordination of first the three African groups, countries there. It was Nigeria, Gabon, South Africa last year. Now Gabon, Nigeria is gone. Now we have Togo and Morocco. Now, you know, we have a problem with Morocco. Not a problem, but a bit of challenge because of Western Sahara. But we need Morocco in the Security Council to work with us. So we have found some form of accommodation in terms of African issues in the Security Council with Morocco. The second thing that we do is that last year, all the BRICS countries were members of the Security Council. India has left. This year, Brazil and Serbia is leaving. So next year, it will be only China and India. So we're working with them. The meeting on the summit in India on the 29th is how do we maintain the BRICS alliance when the three IPSA countries are outside? Because we'll be outside. How do we make sure that the overall global logical is not being disturbed by our failure to be there, by our absence in this country? Next one. We Never after COP 17 so many times. The debate now is the Global Climate Fund. You want to host it. The Chinese are now talking about $100 billion fund. So the question is, should we host it? Why? Because South Africa delivered the Global Green Fund. Mr. Manuel and the team delivered it. So they said, no, let's have a host it. So the cabinet discussing now as we speak, whether should we host this or not. There are those of us who say, no, we should host it. Host it. Can you imagine if every year we got about $30 billion coming to South Africa? It is very good for balance of payment. But also because there's a tendency if you host, people procure things locally for other programs. But I think that I'll hear what the cabinet committee says on this. There's been a lot of debate for and against this, but we'll hear what they say when they come back. Okay, go on. Well, okay, come back to the question of the human rights. All of us, I'm sure you have followed bullet number 3. There's been heavy debate in Geneva last week on the issue of the LGBT. The issue of the rights of people with a different sexual orientation, which we spearheaded last year. But this year, time around, Africa did not work out. Only OIC member states left. Islamic Organization Conference moved out, but Africans stayed in the meeting, in a panel debate, which to us is a very major development, that at least people, there was a panel for discussions. When the OIC moved out, the rest remained and had their discussions. Move up. Can you move again? 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 Let's go on. Now, this is AU regions. You can just look in that slide 47. It was from this year last year. What are we trading among ourselves as Africans? What are we exporting as Africans? It's just to make an indication to show that Africa, by and large, we still export raw material and part of integration is to make sure that we change. But what we are exporting to Africa is more finished products. It's the only region where we really export value-added products in the continent. Most of them is a big value for money in the continent. Hence, we want to get it right. Next slide. Well, truly speaking, we still as a rather dominate trade in the continent. And sometimes there is a lot of political tension. This slide. But also because we have a diverse products for trading, unlike the other countries. Next slide. This is how we sell. Next slide. I'm just trying to make sure that to the chair. Now, chair, these are some of the services that are provided. We are discussing there's a point called the is it the protocol launch policy? Diplomatic policy. Now, we have a problem that we want you to help us. Who must get South African diplomatic passport? Who? Now, all members of parliament want it. Chiefs and kings want it. Bishops and what is the other top of a bishop? They want it. Pope? No, we don't have a pope in South Africa like him. I think CEOs of companies want it. Chiefs of state apparatus want it. Of course, these guys have opportunity to have it. All of them sitting this side. Now, it's a discussion. Second discussion: who goes to take protocol when you go to the airport? The other members of parliament, both houses, want to go through the protocol. Kings, chiefs want to go through. priests, bishops want to go through. No, we need your help, honorable members. We need your help. How utilize those facilities? We do our level best to facilitate between, to give you between the honorary passport, official passport, and honorary passport, which Jerry uses when he goes to holidays. Where possible, we need to assist you to go through this facility. We have guest houses at Waterkloof. How many rooms? 14, 18. 14 rooms. When you come to work, can you stay there in the campus, Virgo campus, of Amahamen?
15 in the
super campus. Oh, but in the campus, 15. We're 15, so we have 30 rooms. So we are discussing with our members how we manage these issues with you. When you have a policy so that you don't feel discriminated against, but at the same time we can manage these things well. Next one. Okay? This is what we do abroad in terms of images, in terms of building South Africa, in terms of marketing the country. Next one. Now, Mr. Modi can talk to this in 5 minutes. Honorable, if you allow, Mr. Modi.
Thanks very much, Chairperson and colleagues. Really, with regard to the financial management part of it, honorable members will know that we have to do a lot more with reducing budgets, so that is one of our key performance areas. But added to that is, despite the reducing resources and the higher mandates, we still are on track to, our goal is to achieve unqualified audit opinions to ensure that the monies are utilized efficiently, effectively, and economically, to comply with all the supply chain management procedures, procurement processes, to comply with the PFMA and the Treasury regulations as well. Next slide.
Next slide.
Yeah. Then, Chairperson and members, just with regard to our budget, as you can see, the budget was for the current financial year at 5.117 billion, slightly down from last year, we had about 5.186 billion. But because of the efficiency savings that Treasury has implemented with the concurrence of Cabinet and the President, our budget is now 5.117 billion, of which 4 billion is for current payments. Then we have transfers, that is memberships of international organizations, our transfers to the ARF, which would soon become the SATPA, of about 826 million, and then our procurement and maintenance strategy for our properties abroad takes up about 247 million rand for the next financial year. In the 2013 financial year, the budget is 5.5 to 1 billion, which really represents an increase in terms of the remunerative increases for our staff members, and the same is reflected in the 2014-15 financial year. This is just the way the monies have been allocated in terms of the various different priorities, management of the department, enhanced African agenda, and so forth, and the same figures that we had seen in the previous slides are projected across the rest of the financial years. Okay, next slide. Supply chain, I think, Chairperson, honorable members, our sole intention in supply chain is to comply with all the Treasury guidelines, the PFMA, and not to fall short of any of the supply chain and procurement requirements. And then, of course, the asset register, which has been mentioned in Parliament a number of times, we're well on track to having a very good asset register. It's been audited by the Auditor General consistently over the years, and we've made significant improvements as far as the assets are concerned. With ICT, Chairperson and members, we've basically rolled out the voice of IP to most of our missions. The 18 new missions are now, the rollouts have now been reduced. It's now 11 missions. We've been able to roll out to the other 7 missions during the course of the year. We have now an acting CIO that has been seconded to us from the ICT, from the CETA, and our strategy on capacitating and training our ICT staff is on track. Then with regard to the second last matter in terms of the corporate services, properties and facilities management, I think DJ may want to say that, but we have an acquisition strategy in place, which is normally found as part of the strategic plan, And then we have approximately 116 properties across the world, which requires maintenance because these properties are owned by the South African government, and we do quite a bit of maintenance on most of these properties. However, with the way we're going with acquisition at the moment, it will take us more than 100 years to acquire all the official chanceries and official residences and chanceries abroad. We've been discussing, and I think DG may just want to speak quickly about that we will look at other means and other ways of accelerating the acquisition of our properties abroad. Honourable Chairperson and members, with regard to consular services, we are continuing to render the consular assistance that is required by South Africans abroad, especially those South Africans that are in distress or that are in need of help. You would have read in the newspapers about the matter of Somalia on TV last night about the Somalia matter. We are involved in that. Also on the matter in the west of Africa that occurred recently. So we continue with that legalization of documentation, authentication of documentation for South African citizens to utilize abroad. We continue with that. We authenticate or legalize approximately 25,000 documents per year, and we are in the process of having an emergency response center operationalized as well. Thank you very much, DJ.
The next slide, can I give DDG Mahai just to the HR just to give us to
Thank you, TG. Honorable members, we in HR's main objective is to capacitate the department through effective and efficient HR management practices. And as we sit now, one of our biggest challenges is the filling of vacant pools. We are now at 13.5% vacancy rate against the national norm of 10%, and we hope by the end of the financial year, or early in the new financial year, we would have achieved the minimum of 10%. However, we having a problem of a moving target in the form of a situation where every other time officials have to vacate their post to be posted as transferred officials at our missions, since this is a situation that only can be filled from inside. So there will always be this revolving vacancy rate. Perhaps when we have a foreign service bill where we can administer the other aspect in a different continuum, it will be better. Another thing that is very key to our functioning is an attempt to maintain employment equity in terms of the law. We also have a challenge here. We have a plan, but unfortunately, for example, appointments or nominations of heads of missions, which sometimes is done outside of our normal recruitment and selection processes, we can hardly have control over what gender and what status do we have to do, but we are now negotiating with the unions to agree on a plan that can be achievable, and hope that we will attempt to achieve the 50% rate of SMS senior management service at least by 2014, which is 50, and 2% of the people with disabilities. As of now, we are at 1.5%, as the slide shows there. And we are making deliberate mechanisms to ensure that we achieve it even before. And then, as I said earlier, the female SMS percentage now is at 36%. In fact, as of the last 2 months, it has increased to 41%. We have not been able to amend there, but we hope to achieve it by the required time of 2014. Thank you.
So a bit long, but in short, that is our plan for 2012-2013 and our strategic plan for 2012-2017. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thanks very much, DG, and for understanding. It has not been that long. Secondly, to say, DG, this committee would really assist you on what to do with those guest houses and the problems of the launch. It's only that we've got to test them first and see what it is. That's on a lighter note. All right, members, it's time for questions. One other thing, DG, I think you need to have some serious discussion with DTI, because in most cases they are housed in your missions. And when you go outside, we hear international relations deployees there, the pressure they have, you know, they cannot even share resources. You find that the minister is going somewhere and resources are depleted in international relations. But DTI can just go, you know, as if it is not one government. So I think you need some serious discussion on this issue with DTI. Honourable members, Honourable Nyami, Honourable Sinclair, Honourable Mguni.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me welcome the detailed presentation that has been presented to us. I think in your first comment, you covered the first question that I wanted to raise, Chairperson. But I want to submit that it will really assist us, DG, if we can have a way of separating some of the issues that will need us to do justice. To be very specific, like the one of the police, you have raised a very serious issue, who is supposed to get a diplomatic passport. I think that one is not going to be guided by our emotions in this presentation here, but we have to have enough time and maybe organize one day where we'll come and deal with maybe one or two items, and that being part of those items that we have to do justice so that we can be able to assist the final outcome that has to be taken by government. But be that as it may, I want to emphasize, DG, that very many a times you'll find that departments will regard a National Assembly as parliament, undermining the very same constitution that we have in South Africa. You know, you'll find department, after making presentation to the National Assembly Portfolio Committee, then it's given, they've made a presentation to Parliament. And I want to submit that for us to have it correct from the word go, we'll always have to have it correct. Once it's National Assembly, it's National Assembly. But Parliament, in terms of the Constitution, is National Council of Provinces and National... It's National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces, both houses, that's what constitute Parliament. And even if it's an issue of a summit or a workshop, once the department has issued an invitation to the portfolio committee, then they take it for granted that Parliament has been covered, and that is doing it disservice. And if you are checking us, we are the only house in this country where you have a representation of all levels, and we are representing the interest of all the provinces. But it's a different arrangement in the National Assembly, and it was not a mistake. It was arranged as such, and we have to keep it that way. Then the other one, Chair, is the issue of the vacancy rate. If you want to link it to what has been raised by the President when dealing with the challenges of unemployment, of course, you always have reasons. You have a lot of missions, there are some challenges, but it's not something that we can be proud of. We have to have a way and maybe come with a particular time frame to say, by this time we're going to make sure that this thing has been attended, because it's not giving a nice picture, given the challenges of unemployment correctly captured by your presentation and by the President when presenting State of the Nation address this year. So it will highly appreciate if you can come with a particular time frame in dealing with that, so that it must not be an issue that will feature when dealing with your presentation. The last one, Chairperson, is from the president. recommendation, it's clear that there is a focus. They know what we'll be doing till whatever year, as it has been presented to us. But when dealing with us as members, the challenge is that in as much as we are doing presentation and you know what we'll be doing for the rest of this year, as Parliament we have our own plan. So once you have your plan, it's really assisting to isolate issues that are going to involve us as Parliament. If ever there's something that we have to attend as committees in Parliament, we get the invitations in time so that we can be able to say in time, we're not going to attend this one, we're going to attend this one, because we have our own program. And that is making it simple for you and ourselves, because if ever you have a very serious strategic workshop that is happening in our own country and we're not attending, and at times it's depriving us an opportunity, and you come here, we're asking questions that we're not supposed to be asking you, we're supposed to be part of those that are making valuable contributions in those forums, but because we've got a program that has not been informed by the good work that we've done, but we got it very late. That would be my submission, Chairperson, but in any way, if we can be able to isolate those that need policy and we have that time and do justice, I think we are in the right direction. Thanks.
Honourable Sinclair, I think we have plus minus about 30 minutes, Honourable Members.
Excellency and officials of the department. Chairperson, I suppose the department will come back because there's many issues to raise and discuss with them. But I just want to start with about BRICS issue. DG, my assumption is that South Africa's involvement in BRICS is a very good initiative, and we must support it and so on. But we must also be realistic and acknowledge that there are certain challenges in terms of dealing with it. Now, South Africa is actually on many levels the baby of that collective developing notion, if you like. Well, how do you see this arrangement or agreement further come to fruition? Wouldn't it be better if we start to motivate in a broader context to say that the S must rather be inclusive of the SADC initiatives than purely just South Africa? Because it seems to me that at the moment South Africa, with due respect, is not contributing everything in terms of the broader context of that arrangement. You had very nice graphs about Africa and the various imperatives regarding elections and conflicts and all those things. But the one that I didn't pick up, DG, was the one on the Horn of Africa, the conflict. It seems to me that that is, at the moment and might be in the future, be one of the hotspots, not just of Africa, but of the world. So what is our approach, South Africa's approach, in terms of addressing that? The third issue, DG, is the issue about tension between South Africa and Nigeria. We saw this past week that the Deputy Minister met with his counterpart and so on. But it seems that that tension between South Africa and Nigeria is boiling over to other fields, if you like. And I want to be naughty, DG, to say that I was wondering of this whole negative experience that we had with the nomination of the minister, if that wasn't a type of retaliation in terms of South Africa's approach into Africa in terms of many things, and that specifically the northern part of Africa start to retaliate, with Nigeria also adding their weight and so on that whole debate. Yeah, then on slide 65, DG, equity. Equity means, if you like, exposure for everybody. Now, if I look at the top management, if my memory serves me right, there's 13 positions. I think 13 positions in the top management. Now, unfortunately, there's just, and my colleagues know my old story, I've continuously motivated that someday we will move away from this black and colored and Indian and pink and green one. But as you look at the breakdown there, top management, it's only black people and Indian people represented. Equity means representativity of everybody. And that is a phenomenon that you see with the males and the females. Why is that happening? Then the last issue in this document, in the strategic plans that we got, from page 31 onwards, there's a lot of activities in terms of doing renovations in the various missions. But what is strange is, and I assume that this is over the MTF cycle, CFO, but what is strange is that in some instances there's very, very expensive projections, if you like. For instance, I picked up there in Angola, for instance, 120 million. China 125 and so on. Is it necessary that we be so exorbitant, or is that the cost of doing these type of developments? And then lastly, Che, page 36 of your report, the triple P, there's reference that there's a contribution of 100 odd million rand a year for the triple P. With who is this triple P, how long is the term, and what does it entail? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I try to be short. I take a couple of questions. I try to summarize them just to be short. First, as Chair said, the DG said, talk about 126 missions, and you have to deal with the different legislation in those missions in terms of employment. So I want to find out the legislation that you want us to do. What exactly do you want us to do? You want to be exempted from the normal condition of employment in South Africa? Or do you have a proposal what could best suit your territory of work? 70% is on regional integration. Usually regional integration, like in Europe, it was due to some threat that was posed by Russia and the like. As these countries, they came together in order to defend themselves. Now, when coming to South Africa or Southern Africa, you want regional integration that is has to do with the economy, so that you can better negotiate in universal trade organizations. Now, some economists think that it's not the right solution because we've got our own interest as the country and as well as our neighbors. Do you think this regional integration will work? Because some, they think it is a pipe dream as far as economic integration is concerned, because our macro-community stability is not the same in all these countries. I just want to share your view on that issue. And then also the same with inter-trade, because of the same reasons. Rightly so that we are unable to do it. Well, there's less inter-trade between us, as you said. Amongst Europe, it's about 80%. Inter-trade in Africa is only 11%. Well, that is due to the infrastructure, skills, and the like. But as Africa, we are the last to be to be free from colonies. Another fact is that in Africa, we're developing very slow because there's still that inter-wars between tribes. You are still fighting for, in short, scrambling for the riches that were belonged to the colonizers before. That's why you are developing so slow. What do you think about that version? And then the issue of NEPAD and the now, South Africa is seen as losing grip on the issue of NEPAD because our economy will be overtaken, as they say, economies by Nigeria in 10 years' time. That was last year, which means in 9 years' time, we might be losing our economic platform as a leader in Africa. Now, NEPAD was key because it was pushing for economic integration within SADC. Now, will our laws or our loss of that status of not being the biggest economy in Africa have an impact on our initiative in NEPAD? In tend to import more food in Africa than we used to. You know, Zimbabwe at some stage was the most country that was exporting wheat, and South Africa these days is importing food, chicken from Brazil. You are importing, at some stage you are importing also grain. Now, the argument is that we don't have land, or if we do have land, we don't have proper support for our farmers. As a result, land goes fallow, and as that result, we import more food, and it's got a threat to food security. We think of Somalia where there's starvation, anyway, there's drought there, but people are not actually tilling the land, they're not working the land, that's why there's food insecurity or hunger. How do we address this as SADC? And some people on the ground, they say there might be civil war in Sudan within a month or two, unless there's some political intervention. How dicey is the situation in Sudan? And lastly, is the issue of Zimbabwe in South Africa. There's also that perception that we are sort of protecting Zimbabwe, or no, trading very slow to Zimbabwe, babysitting Zimbabwe because is one of our own. You don't want to see liberation struggle heroes, no, being disposed of their power, just like Robert Mugabe. How far through, or what's the theory behind this slow trading towards Zimbabwe as far as SADC is concerned? That'll be enough for now, Chair.
I'll also reserve my questions for next meeting, just to be progressive. But I had questions also about Taiwan. No, you don't have to answer them. The situation in Taiwan, as SADC, as a legislative body, all those things. And honourable members, there's a very beautiful building in Pretoria.
Mm.
I think we must go there for our next meeting so that we see it, which houses international relations.
Mm.
I think our next meeting will be planning the next time. We'll just go there when the DG is available. We'll have our meeting there.
Mm.
And so that we cover these things thoroughly, the issues that we really want to raise.
Over to you.
That was, by the way, the issue of the guest houses. Okay, DG.
So, maybe Mr. Mutli will house at our guest houses. Can I add a question? We have a few questions, so why don't we take the rest?
Thanks, DG. Chairperson and Mem. I've got two questions with regard to the renovations of the various missions, Honorable Singh. Indeed, it is very, very costly abroad. It is extremely costly because we even renovating in Washington at the moment. We just constructed an official residence and a chancery in Abuja that cost us in excess of 100 million rand. We constructed our chancery in Addis Ababa 3 years ago. We opened it. It cost us 100 million rand. The cost of the building industry abroad is extremely expensive. But we're looking at various. We are now currently engaged with National Treasury. And of course, Public Works is always engaged with us on looking at various different approaches and how we're going to do that. These predictions are really on market related. With regard to the PPP, who is it? It is Imbuba Hanang, who is the private party, a consortium of different companies. Of course, it includes both sides in terms of BEE and so and non-BEE companies. And the period is 25 years. We they managed the money that we pay to them is to pay off the fees as well as the assets within the department, all the desk, chairs, tables, and so forth, except the ICT assets, as well as facilities management, maintenance, changing light bulbs, fixing the escalators, and so forth over the 25-year period. The last 5 years, we will do a comprehensive assessment of the building. They will fix up everything else so that when the building is transferred to us, it will be transferred in a very good condition. Thank you, teacher.
Okay. Thank you, honorable members. With regard to the vacancy rate, yes, we agree that indeed our ideal situation would be to have a zero rate. We are actually starting to embark upon a strategy in the new financial year to ensure that we as we target quarterly, which is reflected also in our APP, that as far as possible, there should be no vacancy. As of now, as I said earlier, the situation in which we find ourselves is that posts for transferred officials to missions are only filled from head office. In a way, when you fill the post there, you open vacancies. But within 4 years, those people who are posted have to come back. The question what are we trying to deal with here is, how do we make sure that this revolving cycle does not result into a situation where posts are left not to be filled because the incumbents will come back, or how we can make sure that even that is the case, at least we always have only a reserve in case nominations are from people outside of the department, as is the case. So we were, in the last few months, we tried to reduce actually the rate from 17% up to the 13% that we speak about. And if you go to 10%, which will be like a normal one, then it can afford us an opportunity to implement the strategy to leave the post, the transferred officials, vacated post, with what we will fill through the normal public service recruitment and selection. And we are alive to that fact that we dare not have any vacancies. The next question was on equity. Indeed, what we presented is the situation as is. In our plan, we are planning that when a vacancy arises, we will know which groups are underrepresented and ensure that the post balances the representativity that we need to have. For now, in terms of the Employment Equity Act, the designated groups that we are targeting, as we said, are women and disabled, which target is actually mandatory and that we are working towards filling it. We believe we are one of the departments that is very representative in terms of racial groups. It could be on post levels that there may be oversupply in one end and undersupply in another. But our conscious view is that we would ensure that in terms of that plan, when a post is vacated by an African, for example, who may be in good supply, and the other groups are not adequately represented. So in our motivation to fill the post, we'll always go back to the equity plan and see what we need to do. So, honorable members, we definitely would want to abide by any prescript. We know that it is in fact a constitutional matter to be representative of the South African people, and which we will work towards. Thank you.
First, let me thank the chair and the colleagues. About the remarks you've made, I think that most welcome. We've been very careful. I think also there's been a lot from our side. We do have a lot of invitations, and we'd like to really expose. Like recently, we just sent a team to UK, to Norway, and to Serbia on the SADVA. But I must take a blame because I only wrote a letter to the chair of the portfolio committee. I should have written, and we funded them. So we should have funded one of you to be with them because we thought we should expose them. So I think we're taking kind note of what another member have said. And the issue of time limitation. Luckily, sometimes we have can predict certain security meetings, and I think we should do that, Mr. Gutierrez. SADC meeting, AU meeting, UN meetings, so these are planned in advance, and you can hear from the chair. Some of the members would like to attend some of these meetings. so that we then facilitate that process. So I think we send the roster of the planned meeting, both UN, SADC, AU, and other conferences as they take place. So I think the point well taken, and Robin. Now, honestly, I have for you the question you so much asked about BRICS. If you look at this slide, these BRICS countries, population, GDP, GDP per power, purchasing power, and foreign reserves. You see, now South Africa is 50 million, not 48.5, 50 million. But you see, talk about China, 1.34 billion, India, Russia, and then you go to the GDPs. You see, China is almost 7 trillion, India, almost 2 trillion, Russia, 2 trillion, Brazil, 2 trillion. We are at 422 billion. If you look at the reserves at the bottom, they mirror the GDP if you look at the ratio. These are the emerging economies. In the next 10 years, you'll have UK, US, China, India. We are going to change the order of economic power in the next 10 years. So I will still be among the top 20 at the rate of a GDP growth. Whatever you recall, what was GDP in 1994? It was 121. We have increased GDP four times in a space of 16 years. It's unheard of. Of course, only China has done that. But many economies increase GDP over 10 years, double it, but we have quadrupled our GDP in South Africa in 15, 16 years. If we add value, we benefit it, in the next 10 years, we'll double our GDP. I mean, we'll be around 800, 700 billion. If we just add small value, for instance, if you take steel, increase value to third level of beneficiation, just steel alone. And the gold, second, third level, diamond, third level, just that. We see massive GDP growth in South Africa. If you go to the land, you talk about the land. If you go to the land, right now, we import 80% of our soya from Brazil. But if you massify production of soya, there are three areas of soya belt. It's Potchefstroom area, Tarazinda area, and then Queenstown, that belt. If you just massify plantation, just on tribal-owned land, we can reduce soya import from Brazil. It has a big impact on the pharmaceutical industry and food industry. That alone is substantial in the GDP. If you differentiate there are 13 million heads of cattle in South Africa, but if you quarantine northern Eastern Cape, then you quarantine Mafikeng Vryburg area, you quarantine Colonso towards Newcastle area, you have three areas of high quality meat. If you add value to that meat, you increase so much in terms of employment, but also product. So the point I'm trying to make is, as South Africans, we have not developed as yet a hugely comprehensive agro and the community beneficial strategy. These countries, while China moved to trillion from 680 billion 10 years ago to trillion, because China is beneficial in everything. If you go to Shanghai and the coastal cities, you see mountains of iron ore, mountains of everything. They import, they put mountains, they beneficiate. We don't beneficiate. That's our GDP. Brazil in the last 15 years started to beneficiate. India produces everything. Nothing goes out of India raw. Everything. We don't do that. So I'm not very much worried. If you can implement this EPUB, our industrial strategy, honorable, if you can just implement it like we are now planning, once you unlock infrastructure and then you build in British industries, we are attacking them now. Part of President Zuma's BRICS meeting will be to attack them, to say, next time you don't got this iron ore, you have to buy iron. To do that, come next to Tabazimbi, put your plant there. You don't got this platinum, Japan, you take platinum products, so bring those industries in Yamanashi Prefecture in Japan, bring them to Rustenburg, Kukumi, Zambi. If once you do that, like what the Tegi have done, we will then begin to build industries. But they've not taken this very bold decision to say no more trading through London Stock Exchange of our commodities. We'll do it here. Tegi did that during the military rule. Today, Tegi should benefit. If you go to Tegi, they produce a lot of granite and
slate.
Nothing good. If you go to Italy, if you go to Italy, it's a big slate. Today, nothing. Smooth, just small boxes. No more big rocks in the tank. No, everybody must be beneficiated. We need something like that in South Africa to industrialize. The three countries with strategic metals in the world is Russia, South Africa, and China. We don't build our rare metals. For you to have a quality steel, you need certain rare metals. This country is so endowed with strategic rare metals, South Africa. But we have not yet at that level. I see this debate now, industrialization, taking off. But you need to mobilize your state enterprises, like IDC, like others, to come to the party. You need to retool vocational colleges to produce human resources for that. But you need to say to our partners, so we're going to scale down on exports of our companies. If you take coal, if you follow the coal from here via Antwerp into Germany, by the time this coal reaches finally in Germany, it's so changed, you can't believe the coal from South Africa. Because they've been very act. It cost three times in the finance in Germany that it left with bank. Why? Because of valuation. You can do it here and package it. So I think the solution to your concern, or remember, is for us to really invest in the valuation. That slide will change in the next 10 years. You see, just give me a reserves. What Honorable did before he left was to pay off this advance. We know we owe $25 billion. He paid it off. We just started doing this in the last 7 years, this reserves. 7 years, but $50 billion in 7 years. India has been doing this for the last 25 years. So what I'm telling Honorable members is, I think we're on a good course. We should stay in BRICS. It is in BRICS discussion, bilaterally. Maybe what you should do on our chair, when you host summit next year, we should do what we did with IPSA. All members should take part in the preparation and in the meetings themselves. In the business, academic, and in the summit. So they could see how we have unlocked possibilities for South Africa by members of the groups. Right now, all of them are really bound to give us market access on certain products. They have to lower that. So we have to find a way of utilizing membership of BRICS as South Africa. What we have done was mobilize BRICS to deal with question of conflicts of continent. But what you need to do is more market access, because the markets are opening in that area of the world. So remember, I agree with you. What we should do next time, we'll correspond, we'll invite you, we'll try to talk with Mr. Bulebe colleagues at our guest house, and have a meeting in Dirko. so that we have more broader discussions. I'm trying to keep to a quarter to 12 deadline. So if you remember, if you allow, I just want to make that a very broad discussion. Then we take each and every article when we meet next time. Remember. But I have to be, I have to thank you so much for giving us a chance to talk with the honourable. Thanks very much.
No, thanks very much, DG, for understanding. Definitely it will be a priority in the next quarter that we go there. We have been so much exposed. We have gone to quite a number of countries now as a committee. And they did say in India we must pass their regards to you, even staff that work there in the embassy. Thanks very much. Honourable members, did you want to say something, Honourable Sinclair?
Just to say that now that DG has admitted that he left us behind, he can come to the party and arrange for the whole committee to do that trip out of his budget.
If you don't have funds, you tell us that, look, I want to take people with, but I don't have funds. I go to this generous gentleman here. No, he has done that in the past. Because it's good to have all of us have the same understanding. So we'll try to accommodate them.
thanks very much, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. We hope we'll get some, you know, timelines about the bills that you want to bring here so that we can work on them very quickly. Okay. Thanks very much. The meeting stays adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.